My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Is a new week and it is a new Friday, and that means there's a new episode. Thank you for listening and joining along. Hopefully you've been enjoying the past episodes, and I don't know what I'm gonna say here. Hopefully if you're listening to this, it's probably because you like it, so thank you for coming back, thank you for checking it out. If it's your first episode, ignore me fumbling through this intro here, and I appreciate you for checking it out. If you do like it, rate and review it. That stuff helps. That's what everyone says. I don't know how it helps, but on whatever podcast platform you're listening to, leave a review, hopefully 5 stars. Share something about what you liked about it, and let me know what you think of what I'm doing here and if you enjoy it. This episode has a fun conversation. I am doing back to back, and this just coincidentally worked out this way. I try and make sure that the guests and everything are constantly kind of being cycled through, and we don't hear week to week, the same person. But after doing Nick's episode last week and talking about Just Right, the way it lined up was, it's been a couple of weeks since we heard from Jason. And so using an episode we recorded with Jason, slotted in here perfectly. And then I realized the topic was Just Right. So back to back weeks of the same question, but a different guest. So hopefully you enjoyed that topic, because we're doing it again. We're running it back. I think I may have recorded this conversation technically before I recorded that conversation with Nick. I'm not quite sure, but it's new games, new content, new conversation. So hopefully y'all enjoy that. You can find that after the break with returning guest Jason from PlayStation Library, Game Rave TV, all that jazz. Have some fun. You skip ahead if you don't like this preamble stuff. Otherwise, business as usual. Please check out, help share with your friends, post on social media, whatever you can. You got pixelsandpolygons.net for all of your physical ways to buy, or your digital ways to buy physical copies of the books and zines that I've been doing. On the page, the deluxe editions of 32-bit library are up there, limited quantities of those. All the paperback softcover copies of 32-bit library, all 4 volumes so far, are available and in stock now. And retro game zine issues 1 through 4. 4 is a good number. Those are all available. If you buy them from me, you get bonuses like stickers and things. Those are just like free giveaways and free things that you can get from ordering directly from me. I handle all of what goes on there. I pack, ship, and created all this stuff, and it's a independent entity. So please support if you enjoy what I've been doing. And again, if you have friends who you think might like it, word of mouth goes a long way. That's really all I have from as far as a marketing standpoint. So I'd appreciate any share and love and thoughts on getting it in front of other folks as you can. Otherwise, patreon.com/DarrenHupke. There is a digital shop there where you can all the same stuff I just shared that you can buy physically from me, you can also buy digitally from me on Patreon. Those are PDFs that you can download for cheap, $3 for the zines, retro game zine issues, $5 for the 32-bit library books. So not a huge investment to be able to check those out. And if you do enjoy them, you can always go back and get them physically down the road. I also have some other original writing. It's not as consistent there, but whenever I have a different idea or an essay topic or something like that I want to write on the side, I've been posting them there. As I've been working on the new 32-bit library volume 5, I definitely have slowed down that original content, but that will come and go, and it's free to follow along and check out those things. If you do, there's a paid tier if you do want to support. That gets a monthly postcard with a retro game of the month review. It's essentially this world's shortest periodical or world's smallest video game magazine. Just a single review that I write each month for a retro game. And on the other side of the postcard, it's a giant screenshot from the game. So you can sign up for that. You get early episodes of this show for doing that and free digital copies of the retro game zine itself for being a member of that. So it's like $5 a month. So if you can support that, awesome. If you can't, there's other ways to enjoy what I do and get access to what I've got going on here, like I just shared. I think that's all I've got going on. Maybe going to do Phoenix Fan Fusion later in the year, but that's weeks away. And a couple other appearances potentially, but yeah, that's it then. I will end this here since this ran a little bit longer, but after the break, join the conversation with Jason and I as we talk about games that we feel get it just right. See y'all next week. Bye. All right, welcome back to Pixel. Oh my gosh, I almost said PlayStation. welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I'm Darren Hubke. I'm with my returning guest, friend of the show, contributor to my books, just a collaborator of all types, Jason Dvorak from PlayStationLibrary.com. Welcome back to the show, Jason.
Ah, thank you for having me. Good times.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to chat. I mean, when we got connected, it was me, you know, using like just not knowing what I was doing at all, but making a book and figuring it out. And, you know, it involved obviously chronicling and like digging into like the data sets within all of this like PlayStation stuff. And I'd found a few websites. There's a few websites floating on the internet that have, like, you know, the SCUS and SLUS numbers and things like that. But once I found your site, I was like, oh, this is going to make my job so much easier. Like, this is so organized. It's all separated and set out. Every game has, you know, like, the release data and publisher, you know, developer, also all on a single page. It wasn't like multi-sourcing and tracking everything. So I use that in reference to like some of the other data I already pulled. But yeah, from there it was like, well, you know what? Why not? If I'm going to use this person's information, like, let me at least reach out to them and see if, you know, if you want to be involved. And so from there, just being able to kind of collaborate and have you contribute to the books and actually get to like meet you and chat. You know, just having the internet friendship that is formed from it, I just appreciate it. So I'm glad that our paths have crossed, and thank the Google algorithms for sending me your way. But it's been fun getting to know you.
It has, dude. I'll tell you right now, like, one of my favorite interactions with you was when I became one of the bonuses for your first book. I turned to my wife and I was like, am I special? Like, what's going on? But yeah, dude, like, I love the conversations. I love the questions. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I purposefully try and everybody who's a contributor, I think I want to put their names, you know, down in the book and everything. And you were the first person who kind of like got pulled into the orbit to kind of help participate. But then from there, like, again, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, fan of like Digital Foundry and John Linneman and stuff like that. I'm like, you know what? I'll reach out to this guy and let's see what, you know, let's see if he'll do something for it too. And then John got on board. And then now Kurt from Hardcore Gaming, you know, same thing. I didn't know who I was and, you know, if it was weird or not to just ask these people anything. To me, I just see all these names and I'm like, yeah, these are all people who's like, you know, either work or information or hard work, you know, behind the scenes have all helped me out. So like, yeah, let's have them all on board. So yeah, your name is just as important up there with everybody else's in the books for sure. So I wouldn't sell yourself short. You've cataloging and researching and going through this entire, like, you know, journey of like the PlayStation's history. I mean, who else is really doing that work? And so, like, you know, it's important to have that there. And, you know, even if it's just a reference point, like, that data set is like is a huge gold mine for value for, I mean, for people, weird people like me who's, you know, trying to write chronologically about all these various games too. So much appreciated for everything you're doing there. Let's get into it though. We have an episode topic. We are going to answer our main episode question, but before we do that, we'll hit you with some this or that. How do you feel about doing that?
Bring it.
All right.
Make me squirm.
Sequel or original?
No, original.
All right. Tales of or Star Ocean?
I'd have to go Tales because I really, really like the sprite artwork. Mm-hmm. Plus the sassy sword in the first one.
Yeah. I mean, their battle artworks, like, you know, I love those, like, round, you know, like large pixel sprites and all that stuff. They're great looking characters.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Warrior or mage?
Oh, warrior. I'm too stupid to be a mage.
Original hardware or modified emulation?
Oh, original hardware. Yeah, they'll probably CRT out of my cold dead hands.
Graphics or frame rate?
Oh, it depends on the game. By default, I'd have to say graphics. I'm okay with 30 frames per second.
And last one, stay and fight or run and hide?
It depends. Is there a game shark involved? I would definitely be the run and hide, especially I'm playing Insanity difficulty Mass Effect right now. It would definitely be the run and hide.
Yeah. You have to, like, you know, shore up and make sure you're ready before you can just plop down. Rad. Okay. Well, that's the answer to that. That's getting us warmed up. That's getting us our minds set. We can now move into the icebreaker to really crack through and get into the main topic. What is your favorite mini game or game within a game?
Oh.
And I always say this, like, what is your favorite? Like, it doesn't have to be your number one, but, like, what is one that stands out? What is one that you've enjoyed? But, yeah, what is an enjoyable mini game or game within a game?
A mini game with, oh, my God, that's a fantastic question. I don't have a clue. Time's ticking.
10 seconds on the clock?
Yeah. You know what? Let's come back to that after our normal discussion so I can have a little time to think. You caught me off guard with that. I have no idea.
Okay.
That's a fantastic question.
I mean, some of the things in my mind, like the fishing minigame and Ocarina of Time, you know, or like, you know, the doing the taxi missions that, you know, as they scale up in like Grand Theft Auto 3 and things like that. Those are things that I loved, like, you know, as a kid growing up myself. But I will let you percolate on that.
Yeah.
And we will come back around. This is a Pixels and Polygons first. We broke Jason, and the icebreaker actually broke him. So murmur on that. Think about it. Favorite mini game or game within a game. And maybe this conversation will lead to thinking about some as well. But for the main topic, what's an example of a game that is just right to you? So like a combination of things like its length and difficulty and challenge and style, you know, a combination of all of it, you know. It's just, you know, you would define it as being just right for you as a player. And what do you think it did to get it right? But yeah, I love it. Whether you have one example or a few, like, that's totally fine to talk about some.
To be honest, two leap out at me right away. If we're going to stick on my forte with the original PlayStation, NASCAR Rumble is probably one of the few games where, even with its flaws, I would consider perfect. I'm a huge arcade junkie, and my favorite racing games are Hit the Gas and Go. I don't care about brake alignments. I don't care about fuselage or whatever. I'm not enough of a man to know if I'm even using the right terminology for a car. So I'll take Ridge Racer, Rage Racer, you know, Daytona. I'll play Gran Turismo if I'm forced, but, like, I like that speed. And one of my favorite arcade games was Burnout, the Burnout series on PS2 and Xbox. And I played those before I played NASCAR Rumble. And one day I was just like, I'm going to pick up NASCAR Rumble just to play it for review, because why not? It seems like a cool game. And everything about that game is perfect from what I would call not so much an addiction level, but a reward. What's I'm looking for? A risk reward factor. I am very big on being rewarded, or at least kind of like high five for, like, thinking about trying to do that. You see a lot of it in modern games with certain achievements, where it'll just tell you, like, oh, like, you know, you have to fly 10,000 feet. So you have to figure out, okay, where's the highest point? Where's this? And if you figure it out correctly and the achievement pops, you're like, yes, like, you know, I figured it out. In NASCAR Rumble, it's essentially if you took Burnout and Mario Kart and combined them. And it has two different risk reward systems that are so well balanced and can be adjusted to fit your balance of play that it became one of the most addicting experiences I've ever lived. Like, I did not put it down for a solid 2 months. And the way it works is the power-ups in the game and the difficulty of the AI are and the actual overall game difficulty are three separate components. So you can be like, okay, I want to have easy AI, but they can launch as many tornadoes at me as they want. And as you play with it and you find the perfect balance, it just becomes this absorbing experience that, like there were times when there were no less than three or four giant tornadoes. And when you get hit in this game, your car spins a complete almost 360 to 720 based on how hard you're hit. And as you land, you're either thrown into a ditch, or if you learn how to correctly spin midair, you can get hit and land like the Dukes of Hazzard just fine and keep going. And what makes the game so beautiful is you're never punished by being stopped. Like in Mario Kart, if a red shell hits you, you come to a stop. If this hits you, you come to a stop. In NASCAR Rumble, you're not so much brought to a stop. You're just kind of like thrown off course a little bit, or maybe you slide a little bit. So you can learn to adjust and react to those environment hazards. And then once you realize that reaction, you know how to then use it on the enemy, and you'll know how the AI might react. And very few games have that risk-reward system where there is no punishment. And it just makes the game that much more fun to play. And then on top of that, besides unlocking things through just placing first or, you know, go through so many tracks, there were these golden wrenches that were spread out amongst the tracks. And that forced you, in a good way, to actually explore all these shortcuts and all these different paths you can take, trying to find these golden wrenches to unlock all these crazy cars. But then once you unlocked and had the car, you then realized what all the best shortcuts were and how to like attack from those. And then you got back into the game and you could then play the higher difficulties with ease because you now understood the game from basically being forced to understand how everything worked. I cannot recommend that game enough. It's so good. And the graphics were fantastic for a PS1 game.
Yeah, I'm pulling up, I mean, as you've been talking, I pulled up some gameplay on YouTube of it to refresh my memory. But I do remember this game when I was younger as well. And it got good reviews. Well, I take that back. It got mixed reviews, but the reviews that gave it like lower or average scores, it just read like they didn't really play it. You know, like they just thought it was like, okay, this is just like a slapstick, you know, NASCAR game. No, but like to your point, like it's got really solid control. It's got really great visuals, and it's got like some give and take balance there to it that it didn't deserve to be in just some like licensed NASCAR, you know, kind of, you know, throwaway type game. I mean, as a racing game, you know, having the NASCAR license kind of makes sense. But I wonder, you know, if it was an original title, would that have been better for it? Could that have like established its own brand? Could that have become an ongoing series? Like, I mean, I know technically there was a follow-up, but it was going to be a NASCAR Rumble game, but ended up losing the NASCAR license. I think it was just like Rumble Racing or something like PS2. That for PS2. Yep. Yeah.
Exactly.
But like, yeah, had it done that, could this have been that Burnout Before Burnout that then like created its own franchise before then? But yeah, it's a good looking game. It's fun. I played it just a little bit, you know, when I was younger, but it definitely was one of those rentals that like, it seriously debated like, oh, should I go out and buy this now? Or did I get enough out of it? Like, you know, there was a lot of fun there. So yeah, that's a deep cut. That's a cool one to think about.
Oh yeah.
I mean, obviously, is there any variants for NASCAR Rumble, or is there just a single release for it?
I'm almost positive it's a. I should know that, shouldn't I? I'm almost positive it's a single release.
Mm, okay. You said you had two off the top of your head. I'd be curious to know what is that second game. What's the next
first,
one?
The first one would be Mass Effect 1.
One of all of them. One is the one. Okay.
Yeah. So
There's not a wrong answer. In my mind, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan myself as well. I almost lost. I almost just missed the series entirely. I had it. I ended up like, I was working at GameStop at the time. In the previous episode, we talked about, you know, time spent there. But I had taken it home. A used copy came in shortly after launch, and I was like, oh, I'll give this a shot, you know, and ended up playing it for a little bit, but I was like, yeah, I'm not hooked on this. This isn't my thing. I'll just bring it back. But the day before I was going to bring it back, I'm like, let me give it one more shot. And I was like, if I want to get immersed into this, like, let me figure out what's going on here. So I made sure I was like reading every codex entry at the start of the game that were initially available to you. And as those are kind of piecemealed and given to you and everything, like it just expanded the lore and world building with while you were expanding, you know, what you were physically doing anyway. And it just had this great progression to it that like I just loved. And like I somehow like at first taste, like almost missed it entirely. But then once that hit, it was like, I didn't want anything else at all. Like clear the schedule. Like I just want to be in Mass Effect right now, and that is it. But yeah, tell me about your time with Mass Effect. Why Mass Effect 1 is just right for you?
So, I didn't get into it right away. When I was at GameStop, my manager was super hyped for it, and you know he was just like, "Dude, you got it." I'm like, "No." From the screenshots that EA had released, it looked more like it was going to be, and I know this is going to sound weird looking back, but it gave me off the really bad vibes of like a simulation game or like a Baldur's Gate. I don't care for Diablo. I don't care for mouse clickers. I want nothing to do with it. And that's kind of what it reminded me of. And the game came out and he enjoyed the hell out of it. And he came in and he goes, "Dude, you have to play it. For the love of God, please just play it." I'm like, no. A year passes of literally him bugging me almost every day to play it. And we got in a shipment of pre-owned games from home office. And there was a beautiful, clearly brand new, but opened pre-owned copy of The Greatest Hit that came with the first DLC, which I think was Fire in the Sky. And I was like, you know what? With my discount, it's like $15. All right, fine. The DLC alone is like $6. I'll take it home. And I took it home and I put a weekend aside. And for those who have never played the first Mass Effect, after your character's introduction, you are essentially thrown to a planet, crap happens, and then you're sent to this giant space station. And one of two things can happen. You either leave the space station right away to go do your exploration, or you can stay on the space station and just explore the station. And I was curious about the whole dialogue system and the Renegade Paragon, and I spent like the first, I think, 6 hours of the game literally just on the Citadel, finding the keepers, doing all the side missions, you know, helping here and so forth. And I can still remember, like, it was one of those I know this will have ramifications if I choose this and blah blah blah. And I got off the planet, and it wasn't, or off the station, and it wasn't until like the third or fourth mission where you actually were ending up killing a, what I would call like a important character, like if you killed them or if you let them go, etc. And I was like, all right, well, like I know they're wanting to make a sequel, so like I guess I should start paying attention to this. So I started being more Paragon just in case. And when it got to exploring the planets, I know that's like a love or hate thing, but I loved it just because like, you just stick your map in a corner, drive there, pick up whatever you find, move it to a new corner, and just crisscross and pick up everything. And it was always cool to see how much was off the beaten path. Like you might go to a planet that only had like a mission and a power up to go find in a satellite, but there ended up being like four minerals and a side mission and like another like one off that end up opening up a whole new five dialogue boxes with a random character. It was just amazing. And to split this up into two things, the absolute last 2 hours of Mass Effect 1 are the greatest sci-fi movie ever made. And I cannot stress how incredible that is. Like having gone through the Legendary Edition last month again, like I finished that game 23 times, and every time I finish it, I just start applauding when M4 Part 2 comes on during the credits. But I think the reason it works is because morality choice games in general can be seen as a gimmick where it's just like, oh, well, I'm just gonna kill everyone, have at it. But if you allow yourself to actually play it like you would, you will have a different experience than any other person, because if they play it like they would play it if they were really in the game, in the world, consequences are completely different. Like when Mass Effect 2 finally came out and everyone in the store went through their copy, so we didn't spoil it for anyone, we all started coming back and sharing our stories, and literally no person had the same outcome based on what they did from the other person. And it was incredible. And especially when it comes down to picking your class, like picking a class in Mass Effect 1 was like a marriage, because like I'm a Vanguard, like give me a shoddy, give me a thing to throw off. And then you realize you can't use a sniper rifle. So going back to our previous episode, I can't run and hide. I don't have a sniper yet. Like I have to like be up front and so forth. Even if you can't agree with or appreciate a lot of the finer mechanics of the game, like the exploration. Once you understand the choices and the classes, like, you really can tailor to be made just for you. That's why I'm a huge, huge fan and proponent of Mass Effect Andromeda. Despite that game's massive problems, it had the best class system I have ever seen a game, because you could literally be anything. Like, it was awesome. Like, it was so good.
Yeah, I never finished Andromeda. It was just one of those things. It was in that era where I was trying to play everything as it was new and everything. And so once something else came out, it was like, hey, maybe I'll come back to this. But of course I won't, because I'm trying to keep up with everything, you know, drinking from a fire hose. Yeah, I mean, the Mass Effect sounds, I mean, like, you know, I love that for similar reasons and everything. I love this, the choose your own adventure nature of it all. Like, I love those choose your own adventure books as a kid. So when I realized like how much was going on there, you know, some of the major choices, like, you don't even get to know the ultimate impact on them, you know, for a couple of games, like the Rachni Queen, you know, like, you have a choice to completely exterminate an entire race, an entire species, you know, in the universe and, or in the galaxy and everything. And, your choice doesn't really do much in 2, but in 3, it can come back to be like bonus reinforcements you might need just to help, like, you in the tide of battle and everything, to kind of, like, you know, make the final push in that game more successful. And it's just interesting how they had to, like the what if, you know, A or B choices and how they splintered out into different paths. But what if you have this character instead of this character, but made this choice instead of this choice, but are renegade instead of paragon? And what is your response here? And are you a male or a female shepherd? Because now you have to have voice lines for all of these things. Like, there's a lot of effort and energy into planning something like that, that definitely should just be applauded and commended. And I'm definitely more of a... It's one of those, it's a this or that question I have, but medieval or sci-fi. As much as I love like classic RPGs and like the Final Fantasy setting where it mixes kind of like that medieval setting with things, like sci-fi stuff is where it's at for me. Like, I mean, that's the setting, that's the world that I want to be in. So Mass Effect to give me this like adventure game and role-playing game, like mechanics, but mixed in this really cool sci-fi world. It was just, you know, right place, right time for me, that, you know, I'm so glad I didn't miss it. But amazing games for sure. That entire original trilogy, and, you know, maybe I should eventually get around to playing Andromeda, and who knows what will be coming with this theoretical new one and everything. I'm not sure what it will be, but, I will be trying it out day one for sure. Thank you for sharing those. Speaking about that, then, speaking about NASCAR Rumble, you know, thinking about some racing games, thinking about licensed games, thinking about, you know, PlayStation games, and then thinking about Mass Effect, you know, long adventures, you know, invested, you know, gameplay experiences, tight narratives and everything. Have you thought about any other mini games or games within a game that come to mind?
I got stuck on, I don't know if you'd actually classify a morality system as the mini game, so to speak. But if I had I think right now the best mini game, at least within the last few years, that I guess I enjoyed because I did the whole freaking thing. In Ark the Lad 1, and the Ark Lad trilogy for PlayStation, one of the side missions is essentially a mini game where you have to go into a tournament, and instead of it being like your squad against another squad, it's literally just one on one. And you have to, like, you know, you can only use that one character. So if they're super weak against this character, you have to figure out how to, like, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason I call it a minigame is because after you win your first fight, it's like, hey, congratulations, you won your fight. If you win 9 more, you know, we'll give you a prize. And I was like, oh, okay. So I played it and I got my prize. And then I was like, oh, you know what? I'll just do one more. I can level up a character. And I got to that one. It's like, hey, congratulations on your 11th win. If you win 20 more, we'll give you another prize. And this kept going up until your 250th win. And it says, hey, if you win 750 more, we'll give you a bunch of stuff. And I was like, I'm a glutton for punishment. Let's do this. And for like 3 hours a day, every day, for I think a week and a half, 2 weeks, I just sat there, one battle. And I finally completed the mini game. And it was so worth it, because when you finish it, they're like, oh my God, you did 1,000 battles. Here, have one of everything in the game, and then this special item, and then the character stops, and a new message block comes up, and it says, okay, that's great. We need you to now save, and it literally says, we now need you to save the game, turn off the system, and go outside.
That's funny. Yeah, that's an investment. Yeah, that it reminds me of when Shenmue 3 was finally released. They have a fishing mini game in it, and I mean, there's a lot of mini games within Shenmue. Shenmue essentially is a duct taped together 17 mini games that is the entire game. But one of the trophies for that, it was to catch 1,000 fish, I believe. I think it's 1,000. You know, I'd maybe caught, 60 or 70 or so, trying to like make sure I was getting all these other items and things like that throughout like my playthrough. And once I realized like, hey, you know what, I want to get the platinum trophies, for this game, because I did in the Shenmue 1 and 2 like re-release, I did get the platinum trophies in both those first two games. So I was like, it only makes sense for me to go and get everything in Shenmue 3. When I started completing the game, one of the other frustrating ones was collecting like every single capsule toy in it. And some of them are like super rare and can only be found in one machine, in one location. So doing all this work and getting that really frustrating one to have all the capsule toys, I was like, cool. So all I have left to do is just get like this fishing mini game done. Like, let's capture 1,000 fish then. And I started doing it, and it's like, you go out and you can fish for like a set period of time and maybe capture like a handful of fish. I mean, I forget, it's been so long, I don't remember exactly how long, but I was doing the math on like, okay, I'm catching essentially, one fish every 60 seconds to 2 minutes type of thing. Like, that's what it's averaging and everything. But wait, if I was to do that for 1,000 fish, like, this is going to take me 18 hours or something like that, like,
yep,
of just fishing. And it's not even that the game was mindless or passive enough that you can kind of like put something else on the TV or like, like scroll with one hand on your phone at the same time. Like, it was involved enough that you had to be somewhat paying attention to what was going on. And I've probably caught 400 or 500 fish and realized like, this is it. Like, I found my threshold. Like, I'm not going to get this because of this. And I kept thinking, maybe I'll come back in a year, and if I just jump in and only do fishing, and if I just get a couple hundred every couple of months, maybe I'll eventually chip away at it. But I've never returned back to it to try and keep doing that, for that platinum trophy. It's just so brutal.
I say, thinking about it now, I don't know why I didn't think of it until, 20 minutes ago. In Horizon Forbidden West, they have that board game.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. It's like Banook or something or whatever. It's basically chess, but with like area of effect changes based on what tile you're on. That was actually, I didn't get into it like hardcore like I did like the Battles and Arc, but that was actually fun just trying to figure out if you wanted to like try and, because for people that didn't play it, you have to get 7 points by collecting the other opponent's pieces. So there was a strategy in trying to figure out if you wanted to just try and kill this one piece worth 7 points, or like these 7 pieces worth 1 point each. And that introduced a whole kind of different dynamic to the idea of like chess and checkers. That was actually really cool.
Yeah. And the other neat part about that is that as you beat people, you got a couple pieces new that you can add to your little like loadout and everything that you would do. And then, you'd get to a new town or new location, or you find some new area to explore. And then suddenly there was one or two people there who were ready to play that game. And it was one of those ones all throughout the game that you were, like, if you wanted to revisit it, it was stringing you along in a really entertaining way. Like, I did enjoy that as well, too. That was a fun one. Okay, we did it. Another episode in the books. We got two good examples of games that were just right for you, Jason, and we were able to answer the questions, and we were able to even double back and get that game within a game question answered too. So the icebreaker did not break you ultimately.
There's a loading time. It's all good.
Yeah, keep your honor ahead. You've got it. You've still maintained your honor. That's all we've got then for this episode. Again, just like the other one, I'll have your social media tag, website, YouTube channel, things like that in the show notes below. Discord info I can even throw down there too, so folks can kind of find you. But any final thoughts you want to share before we wrap up for the day?
Just relax, play games, and play what you love. It's all good.
Yeah, have fun in life.
Exactly.
Rad. Well, I appreciate you jumping on with me, Jason. We will, of course, have you on in future episodes for sure. I know that, I mean, we're recording this in the same sitting as the last episode, but hopefully it is less weeks between episodes this next time than it was this last time. So definitely want to have you on sooner than later. Always a fun time talking to you.
Good time talking to you, too. Keep those questions coming, man. I love it.
Yeah. All right, have a good one.